8:03 on this, what do you call it, Taco Tuesday morning. 70 degrees over most of the Deltaplex, 72 in the southern parts in Monticello, and at our studios at 920 Commerce in Pine Bluff, 71 degrees. Greg Horn, Will Jenkins, and join us in studio, Jefferson County Sheriff Lafayette Woods Jr. Sheriff, thanks for jumping on with us and coming by this morning.
Good morning, Will and Greg.
Good morning.
Pleasure being here once again in the studio, hanging out with you fellas.
Thank you.
You're awesome standing out guys, man.
So I just want to jump right in it. I think you have a unique perspective. This whole deal in Atlanta with the shooting of Rashard Brooks, it appears that he was drunk in the drive-thru. The cops came. They were making a DWI arrest, it looked like to me. And then all of a sudden it went terribly wrong. It doesn't seem as cut and dry. I mean, the George Floyd in Minneapolis, that's cut and dry to me. I mean, I'm right. Not a police officer, but it just looked horrific. Went on for 8 or 9 minutes. Just totally out of line. I mean, the guy should be charged with murder. I think he has been and will be convicted. But the deal lands a little bit, maybe not quite the same. Your perspective, please.
There are a lot of variables involved in incidents when it comes to police and citizen encounters when they are attempting to apprehend a suspect or take action. But more specifically, when you talk about use of force. And so use of force for a lot of people, looking at it from the outside in, it's difficult because you don't see all the variables. You don't see all the video. You don't see all the footage. You're not there. And so it's hard to cast doubt, on the officers on the onset without having all the facts and all the video. There are multiple different angles, not only just the footage from the actual officer's body camera, but obviously from the actual Wendy's there itself, the exterior video. What I can say regarding that particular incident, it seems as though on the onset everything was going all right.
Seemed like it.
Yeah. Very calm. The officer were patient. More patient than I've seen some officers. And it seems like it, and it typically, that's how it happens. 0 to 100 in a matter of seconds. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened in the case. Based on what I did see, the footage I did see, the limited footage I saw, if it's told like I have been told, there's some issues with the actual the shooting itself. Now, you talk about taser and deciding as an officer whether or not you're going to use force if somebody actually disarms you with your taser. I'll give you a scenario. You've got one officer there. He's got a taser. Suspect disarms him. In that instance, the officer would be most definitely justified in using deadly force. Most definitely. One of the reasons why I say this is because in our training, we actually understand and know that a taser is less than lethal. However, we also know after having been, shot with it, physically shot with it, and knowing that it can incapacitate you for moments or even a longer duration, depends on how much application is applied to that actual incident. At that point, you know it can incapacitate you to the point where you can be disarmed with your actual weapon, your service weapon, your firearm. And so absolutely, in that instance, you would be justified in using deadly force. You've got two officers there.
That causes the problem to you.
It challenges. And then more than that, you've got a suspect running away. And so that causes a lot of problems. Again, I hadn't seen all the video, but, one officer, absolutely, without a doubt, we wouldn't even be talking about it right now.
Okay.
Two officers, there's some challenges there.
So even when the guy was running away, if there had only been one officer there, you thought it would have been maybe not quite as cut and dry?
Well, even that situation, one officer's and he's running away,
he could still tase him. And
generally, taser's 21 feet. Your range is 21 feet. And once you deployed it, that cartridge, that is it. At that point, you're left with having to dry stun somebody by removing the cartridge that's already been deployed and dry stunning them. In order to dry stun somebody, you have to be in close contact with that person. And so if he's running away, that's not an option at this point because he's running away. I don't know whether or not the actual taser was deployed once he disarmed the officer. I've heard rumors that it was deployed and he missed. Certainly two officers and running away, it poses some serious issues.
Well, it happened so fast.
Yeah. And even to the point where some people say, well, maybe he had a gun, he didn't know it. The video I saw, he was actually searched.
Yeah.
He was patted down.
Exactly.
And so I think that goes out of the door. It seemed to be a lengthy pat down at that point. And so that goes out of the door, the notion that maybe I thought he had a gun. if you didn't lose sight of him within that point you did the pat down or the search into when the actual shots were fired, you lose that argument about, well, he may have had a gun. Again, I didn't see the last portion of the video where it actually shows the actual shots being fired. I just heard them. And at that point, all the officers were out of view of the camera, that particular body camera, because I think it was a body camera of the actual officer who was disarmed. The body camera fell off.
I saw one last night. It looked like it was from like a security camera, and I saw him firing.
Okay.
And the guy was running away. And the guy turned back around like this as he was running, turned back behind him and fired the taser.
That poses a lot of challenges. Yeah. I mean, that poses a lot of challenges. Can you estimate what the distance was when that happened? The video you saw, estimated distance?
It was less than 21 feet.
Okay.
But it wasn't as close as I am to you, which is 4 or 5 feet. It wasn't that close. So,
yeah, again,
10 or 15, I would guess. I mean, it's hard for me to.
One officer, I think in that situation, certainly justified. Two, it poses a lot of challenges.
Well, there you go. I'm glad to hear that from you because to me, it's not as clear. I mean, the one in Minneapolis with George Floyd, that was just.
Yeah, it was egregious.
That was over the top.
Yeah, that no doubt. I don't think any member of law enforcement that I've worked with or known agrees with what happened in Minneapolis. And
sane human being would.
I'll tell you, and this is a saying that us law enforcement officials have, there is nobody who hates a bad cop worse than a good cop. Nobody.
Say that one more time.
There's nobody that hates a bad cop worse than a good cop.
I like that.
That's really good.
I like that.
That's good words right there from Lafayette Woods Jr., Sheriff of Jefferson County. So what else? I mean, there's a lot of what's the word I'm looking for?
There's a lot of tension right now.
Tension, that's a good word.
The climate is high. Last week I appeared on PBS Arkansas in Conway. Mm-hmm. I'm part of a series called Healing the Divide, Race Relations in Arkansas. And Governor Hutchinson actually chimed in, gave us his insight on what's going on in the country and also, mm-hmm, more importantly, Arkansas, as it relates to the death of George Floyd and so many similar others prior to him and now the Atlanta shooting. I've always said that it's been argued that disproportionately minorities have been misrepresented in all levels of justice system, from arrests, incarceration, to even, in custody deaths as a result of a law enforcement encounter. But people have talked about, what do you do? How do you change it? Some people have suggested, new training, more training, policy changes. I'm not opposed to those things because obviously we review policy all the time to make sure that we've got good policy and that, more importantly, they're being implemented and being utilized. But more than that, I think it comes down to, on the onset, recruitment. You have to consider race relations and recruitment. And so we got to do a better job in making sure at the recruitment level that you're vetting individual applicants for signs of issues with race, discrimination, bigotry, things of that sort. And you can't dismiss them. Now, it's made this very challenging because there was a Supreme Court case that came out. One of the tools we used to use in recruitment in the hiring process, pre-employment, was to people tell you some of everything on Facebook, social media. They tell you a whole life story. And as an employer, we used to look at those things. And the Supreme Court came out and said the First Amendment right, individual has a right not to be compelled to give up passwords, to have potential employers to review their social media accounts for, things like that. And so it makes it challenging now. Unless they're going to offer that up, you can't see the true person. Anybody can, breeze through an interview, say all the right things to get hired, and even, remain solid for, a matter of time until that fateful incident, similar to what you saw in Minneapolis, happens. And at that point, it's too late. Now you got to deal with the backlash of it. Mm-hmm. And so at the recruitment level, we got to do a better job at making sure that we vet out individuals that have the tendency to have challenges when it comes to race and violating individual constitutional rights. We got to make sure we're doing good at that. And from that point, policy, making sure that we vet these policies, making sure we got good policies on the books and that they're being utilized. But lastly, more importantly, end result, when it does happen, because we're going to fall short, no doubt. I made an article spoke on an article a couple weeks ago that was published in the Palmer Commercial about, race relations and the fact that as a sheriff, we're tasked with you know, making sure that we keep people safe, life and property. But we will fall short, no doubt about it, because we're human. We're going to make errors. Mm-hmm. We're not going to operate error-free. What I can say, and what my promise has been, is that when we operate in a fashion that is questionable, we're going to hold officers accountable. We've got a proven history and record of doing that from Jefferson County Sheriff's Office. You know, when individuals, you know, cross that line, you know, we have to deal with it accordingly. And we don't shy away from it. We don't sugarcoat it. We're very transparent when it comes to that. And so we've had instances in the past where things have been questionable and officers have been held accountable. And we will continue to do that vigorously. I think it's the right thing to do. I think citizens deserve no less.
How have officers been held accountable?
You know, you got anything from less than a counseling all the way up to termination. And the individuals have lost their jobs. And I'll be honest with you, that's been things that some people have said and questioned, well, you know, we've seen things more egregious and officers have not lost their jobs. I just stand here in the studio and tell you straight up, when officers cross that line, we've got to take it head on. We've got to approach it because what we do in that particular case, we know if it happened once, it could happen twice. And so we set a precedence for what happens and how we deal with those situations. So we also got to look at that. So we make a decision to, you know, send out disciplinary actions or hand out those disciplinary actions against an officer for misconduct or wrongdoing.
How often does it happen? I mean, I'm of the firm belief that most police officers, sheriff's deputies are good people, but they're
they offer the most part.
Everybody's human and everybody's not perfect.
They offer the most part. We have some that sometimes are not able to separate business and pleasure, and that's a thin line between the two of them. And sometimes, even some simple as, you know, a citizen calling in and saying, well, the officer spoke to me disrespectful. You know, he was not courteous. When you stress this to our officers, you know, when you're encountering citizens, at the end of the day, they're taxpayers. you know, the notion that, you know, you stop somebody and say, well, I'll pay your salary. Well, I mean, it's true. It's right. True. Quite frankly, it's true. And I think that everybody, no matter what they are, you know, being judged for, or at least what they've been thought to have done, or mm-hmm. the crime they have thought to have committed, or being accused of committed, you know, innocent to proven guilty of a court of law. We cannot be the enforcers, the judge, and the jury. We can't do that. And so I'm mindful of that, and I tell my deputies to be mindful of it. At the end of the day, you treat deputies or you treat a citizen with respect, the utmost respect. Think about your parents. Think about your mother and father, grandparents. Treat people how you want to be treated. And when it's time to be judged, that would happen in the courtroom, not on the side of the road.
Sheriff Lafayette Woods, Jr. of Jefferson County, joining us this morning here on the Voice of the Deltaplex, Oldies 101.3. Can you stick around for a couple more minutes?
Sure.
We'll be back. It's 8:16. Eight-eighteen. Greg Horn, Will Jenkins, joined by Jefferson County Sheriff Lafayette Woods Jr. And very good conversation this morning. I appreciate you coming in, Sheriff. And I know one thing. I don't think if I was accused of a crime or I'd gotten pulled over, the one thing I'm not going to say to an officer is I paid your salary. I think that's not a real polite thing for me to do.
Hey, that's mild compared to some of the things we hear. That is very mild.
I bet you this would be my friend. Do you know who I am?
Yeah. Get a lot of that too.
That sounds like what you would say, Will Jenkins.
Do you know who I am?
Hey, you love those ones. You get up to the car and, you know, they're not seeing anything. They're holding their hand out the window with the phone. They've already called somebody that. Listen, I was a young
deputy. They called the sheriff.
I was a young deputy that was going on. So, man, politics, man. Politics at its finest.
That's funny. I just don't think that's a good way to start.
I'm gonna say this on air. Just leave it alone.
Okay. I'm recording.
I can remember one time I called somebody.
Yeah, you did. Speaking of that, yeah.
Unsanctioned by the radio station, by the way.
Right. Okay, that's what friends are for.
So there's a lot of racial tension.
It is.
Your office. I have zero idea. I have zero idea what's the racial makeup of officers for Jefferson County Sheriff's
Office. So we're pretty balanced. We not only consider race, but gender as well. And so we try to recruit across the board. And we try to consider that when we're recruiting. We want to make sure that our office is reflective of the community as a whole, not individual as a whole. And so it's very important. But I tell you, recruitment is getting very challenging. It's getting very difficult. And I'm going to be honest with you. When you look at what has happened in Minneapolis, now in Atlanta, and other places, it just makes it that much harder. We're dealing with a different breed of individuals. When I say breed, it's a different generation. And so with that being said, they're not going to wait for change. They're not going to sit around 50 years and wait for it. They're trying to force it. I don't agree with the violence. I don't agree with the looting. I don't agree with it at all, because you can't force change like that. Mm-hmm. The wheels of justice, they turn slow, and you can't speed that up in any fashion just by looting and committing crimes.
Seems to me that hardens people a little bit. People,
it does. Yeah. Right now, the movement, and I say the movement, has momentum. What I'm afraid is going to get lost in a shuffle with all the things you see on the side is happening. Mm-hmm. Looting, people taking advantage of it. People are infiltrating what you see seemingly peaceful protests that turn violent because you've got somebody who's a outside agitator mm-hmm. trying to exploit the situation.
That Wendy's that burned down.
Absolutely.
And I came on air yesterday after we had talked about it a little bit, and I said, I think it's worth noting that the pictures of, they think the person that started the fire was a white female.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was worth noting in that yeah. situation.
It is. I mean, it makes no sense to burn down your own community. And I'll be honest with you, as a business owner, I would not, rebuild. If obviously I got insurance on the building, cash in on insurance, and not rebuild. I mean, it makes it difficult for the one to rebuild when you know stuff like that going on. So every time we have something that you disagree with or something happens you don't agree with, you're going to burn down the town? I just don't agree with it. It's not right. It's a distraction to the greater cause, and that's to effect change, but do it in the right way.
That's right.
Well, I think a lot of it may be, just a few bad apples that are doing that are the protesters. I mean, the protesters aren't the looters. I mean,
right.
They're
right.
separate people, I believe.
Yeah. We call them professional agitators.
Yeah. Well, so there's a few of those, mm-hmm. and they're making a lot of people think all the protesters are that way.
Right.
Just like just a couple of cops are making people think all the cops are that
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. And it's very difficult. Again, nobody hates, a bad cop worse than a good cop. I mean, it's just one of those situations where we're judged because we do have the same job, somebody wear the same uniform, gun, and badge, and are there for the same purpose. And when we fall short, when one of us falls short, we're judged across the board. And it's very challenging to try to reassure citizens in this community that we're not that. That's not who we are.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you a really serious question. It is a serious question, but it's this whole idea of defund the police. Just absolutely insane, I think.
It is ludicrous. It is absolutely ludicrous. I'll say this. The idea, just think about the idea. Now we see what's going on now and the response that police are having to provide in the wake of a demonstration that have turned violent to try to be proactive in that approach. But think about a time where you didn't have law enforcement. What's the alternative? If you defund police, what's the alternative? Who's going to go to those calls?
The purge.
That's what it would sound like.
Yeah.
Gun sales
would go crazy. Ammo sales would go crazy. I mean, it's nuts.
It's a stupid conversation to even think about that. It makes no sense at all. It does not.
People started talking about it and yapping about it, and I noticed politically a lot of the people on the side that's saying that are backing off of that.
And I'll tell you, I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm not saying it because I'm biased, because I'm the sheriff,
mm-hmm.
by no means, but I've had to call the police before. I've been a victim of a crime before.
Mm-hmm.
And so, absolutely, there's a greater worth. You can't judge that 1% and say we're going to judge all of them. Mm-hmm. And, it may be more than 1%, but they're saying it's a lot less good officers or bad officers. A situation where you've got a plethora of good officers.
Mm-hmm.
That percentage of the bad officer is very small. It's very small. And I know it's impactful. It's important to note that we don't get lost and don't lose sight of the ones who are bad or committing, crimes and violating people's constitutional rights. But at the end of the day, change is going to have to take place at some point. And you can't force that change in a way that's trying to be forced. We just got to sit down. And I understand, you know, we've talked. Now it's time for action. I agree. After talking comes action. But we got to do it in a way that's going to make sure that we have effective change. We can't do that by committing violence and trying to force change. It's not going to happen because, here again, you know, we were, I think a lot of us were looking for a quick arrest. But I know on this side of the law that quick arrests don't always end up in an idea where you've got a successful conviction in the end. Mm-hmm. If it starts wrong, it's going to end wrong. Mm-hmm. And so prosecutors typically want to take their time to make sure they can vet all the evidence and make sure they have a good case and they've got the good charge that attached to that case. The crime, the elements of the crime have to meet each other. And so if you don't have that and you go in that courtroom and you've got a crafty, shifty defense attorney, because that's what it comes down to, conveying to the jury who's got a better argument. It's not necessarily even about right or wrong, guilt or innocence. Sometimes it comes down to who's got the better argument. And you're conveying it to 13 people. You know, I mean, it's one of those situations where the reality of it is everything we've done up to this point, everything that people have protested and demonstrated about, when it comes to trial, that can look very different. And I just remind you, look at the Rodney King situation. If you go back to that, it looked very egregious. What happened in that case?
Wow.
That's something to think about.
That was long ago. For young people, only have seen it. They didn't live through it. That was really bad.
It was. Yeah. I mean, and you would have thought with that video, so egregious, so blatant, so direct, so deliberate, that you would have had a different outcome on the verdict on the criminal side.
It's been a long time, but that was very egregious. Mm-hmm. There's multiple police. I still don't think it was as egregious as what we saw in Minneapolis.
Oh, no. Minneapolis was, in our estimation, it was something different about that. And people always ask, and I weighed in previously about it. My really, just summing it up by saying that what was different for me, and I saw it, is that it was more intimate. It was slow. It was methodical. It was deliberate.
Intimate, that's a good word.
It's just like you sat there and saw somebody just lose their life. You saw every second of it. And so it was different. It wasn't, you know, suspect ran, suspect tried to get my gun. We shot him, he died. There was an instant death. This was a slow, slow, hands-on death. And, I mean, it was different. It made it so real. And then you think about also the time in which this is happening. You've got the national pandemic going on with COVID-19. And so there's so much going on at one time. And it adds all together. And I think people are just frustrated with the point where they want something to happen. They won't change. And they won't change now.
Sheriff Lafayette Woods Jr., thanks for coming in this morning. We'll hopefully have you again soon. Appreciate it.